This weekend, we had our teen weekend challenge, Friday night and Saturday morning with Phil Robertson, and had a great turnout. I want to say personally thank you to the young people that came out and enjoyed the good time that we had. Brother Phil's going to be with us in a couple of weeks in our Thursday night session, and so we have until then to memorize Joshua 1, 6 through 9, so we need to get busy. So I thought that by the time he got here, we would we'd have it all memorized. So that's our object. But had a great weekend. Thank you to all who made that possible. In many ways that you contributed, you came and brought things for them to enjoy. And we appreciate, of course, Sister Desney letting us use her vast barn to do all of that. And it's really good to get together and to spend time with young people and to encourage them. And we studied about Joshua. Be of good courage and be strong and of good courage, I should say. I said that wrong. But we had a great weekend. And again, thanks to everybody for being there, especially, of course, with Connor obeying the gospel. And that was exciting. And we're happy to have that. We've been talking about young people recently. Last week we talked about really the parenting side of things, about how that as parents there's just a lot that we're to be doing in training our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. We suggested that there were six pillars or six lessons that would help us understand the aspects of parenting. But we realize that there comes a time when those little fellows grow up and they get a little bit older and they have their own mind about themselves and they begin to forge their own life and they turn into that exciting time of young adult. And the lessons that we learn really of parenting hopefully will be instilled in them, that they will have some things to take with them in life and to be able to find happiness in life. Because the period of young adult, that period has always been a time of transition, whether it is in 215 or whether it was in 1492 when Columbus sailed the ocean blue or it was in the days of Abraham. It really doesn't matter because all things are really just the same. That young adults and that focal point of life have a lot of things that they're being challenged by. They're not quite old enough in some ways to be the adults, but they sure don't want to be treated like the young children. And so it's a time of transition, often between the protection of the home environment and the things that they're familiar with to that great world that they're going to go out to in college and go off into the world on their own. They're excited because they can leave home and do what they want to do and go where they want to go. And I may have told you this before, but when my youngest son went to college, I asked him one time what was so exciting about it, and he says, "You know the greatest thing about college?" I said, "What?" He said, "You can take a test and leave." And I said, "That's it? I mean, that's your whole, yeah, boy, you can take a test and walk out and it's okay, you know?" And I thought, well, I guess that's okay. But, you know, it's a tough time because as much as you love high school, there comes a time when you do need to leave high school and then deciding of what you're going to be doing and where you're going to be going and the decisions about marriage. And I know that you're not thinking about that right now, but those things are going to come up and then you're going to try to figure out what kind of job you've got. You know, what am I going to be studying? What kind of course am I going to be taking? And granted, you'll probably change that four or five times before you finally settle onto something to your parents' relief. And what kind of course of life is, but it's just sort of a tough time. And sometimes people go into the military and then they come back and there's just this wilderness wandering that sometimes young people go through. And it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. I think in all of us, to some degree, we have that period of wilderness wanderings and we do it at different ages but that transitional time between high school and the college and eventually marriage and all those things, those are some tough decisions. A lot of peer pressure, a lot of questions that are being asked, a lot of directions that people are going that really aren't good directions that, you know, you're saying, well, I don't want to go that way and, you know, what are we going to do and how am I going to know how to make those right kind of decisions? And so we're going to talk this morning about six lessons of learning how to build a godly life. You didn't think I was going to waste that lesson from last week, did you? The principles that we learned last week about parenting hopefully being instilled in the hearts and minds of young people are things that they can carry with them. We talked about these last week as far as parenting skills and the fact that as a parent we really need to realize that what we do with our children are going to have consequences, that there's going to be a plus and a minus, that whatever we do, there's going to be the reaction that's going to be there, and that we as parents only get one time that we can bring our children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And it's not an easy task. It's tough being a parent. I mean, it is, it's like the Peace Corps, you know, that isn't such a job you love or never love, but it's pretty tough. And we've got to instill in them the principles and the righteousness of God, and that we've got to show them that way. And the fact that what we have before us as parents is a creature that will never cease to exist. I think one of the most impactful ideas about parenting is the fact that our children are just never going to cease to exist, that we're all eternal creatures, and that it's really the need of building a godly life is now. Well, those principles are important for young people to instill in their lives too. This is a pattern that if we follow this pattern and realize that as young people that this will help us in life, it'll give us a good start. It'll give us something we can work on. Because if we instill these in our children and they take them with them in life, it will give them a security. It will give them the opportunity to really find the worth of what life is all about. But we have to begin with that whole idea that the fact that there is a consequence to life. We used in our text, of course, of Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 7 that Paul reminds us that when we talk about the things in this world, that there's not going to be an idea that we're going to do something and it's not going to have a consequence to it. Everything we do is going to have a consequence. He says that we should not kid ourselves. Don't be deceived. Don't act like this doesn't happen. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will to the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. The principle about sowing and reaping is the fact that there is a reaction to everything. I mean, you studied in Newton's law about gravity and all this kind of good stuff. He didn't invent that stuff. He didn't come up with it. Truth existed before he got there. But the reality of it is there's always an action and a reaction to the action. And as young people, one of the most important lessons you're going to learn is the fact that whatever you do, there's going to be consequences to it. You see, the problem with the world often is that, oh, don't worry about it. Just have fun. Go out and do what you're going to do. They don't tell you about the consequences. That's like kind of commercials. You know, the problem with commercials is the black part. The problem with commercials is that they show you that and then it goes to black. It fades to black. Life doesn't fade to black. Life stays real. And so when you see this exciting commercial for beer example, and you know Anheuser-Busch, and they've got these black stallions, or maybe that's Coors or something, and they're raising up on their haunches, and you had snow-covered mountains, and you're saying, wow, what a beautiful picture. They don't show you the drunk that's in the gutter. They don't show you the family that has been destroyed by the alcohol. You see, there's consequences to what we do. The decisions that we make in life, yeah, there's an action to it. Now, it may not be immediate, it may be later. And sometimes it may be eternal. But the reality of it is, we need to see that everything that is going to go on in our life is going to have a reaction. And in our text, for example, he says in verse 8 that if you sow to the flesh, you're going to of the flesh reap corruption. There's an expression that you know that, well, I'm going to go out and sow my wild oats. You know, the problem with that is that you cannot sow your wild oats and pray for a crop failure. If you go out and sow your wild oats, you're going to harvest those wild oats. It's not an idea, it's a philosophy of the freedom of life just to do whatever you want to do and that you don't have to worry about that there's going to be consequences. That's a lie. L-I-E, lie. It is the reality that whatever is going to happen, there's going to be something waiting. You know, it's like going into a restaurant and eating a fine meal and thinking you didn't have to pay for it. Oh no, there's a bill that's going to come due. Freedom has a cost. Freedom has a penalty that is attached to it. And when we talk about if you want to sow to the flesh, there will be the consequences. We have to understand that there is a result of our actions. And God is saying, number one, don't kid yourself. Don't think we can get this by God. Don't think that God doesn't understand. Don't think that God isn't aware. If we fill our lives by sowing things of the flesh, we're going to reap corruption. But there's a good part. We see the negative side, that if we're going to sow to the flesh, we're going to reap corruption. But notice that there is a good consequence, that if we sow to the Spirit, we're going to reap everlasting life. And we'll talk about at the end the fact that it's a better situation because you're going to have a better life anyway. But you see, there is a consequence to the things that we say. There's a consequence to the things that we do. There's a reality that comes with the price that we paid. And that enters into all kinds of situations that we look at. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount tells us that we need to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And what He is telling us is, in Bible class, we talked about that in our hearts there's this little tiny throne and somebody sits on that throne. It's either me sitting on that throne or God sitting on that throne. It's either one. There's not another choice. It's either me or God. And the problem with that throne is it's a one-seater. Nobody else gets to sit on that seat but whoever we put there. And what Matthew 6:33 tells us is that whatever is the rule of life, whatever I want to guide my decisions, that's where that's going to come from. Let's talk about your job. Let's talk about your career. You know, there's a lot of great careers and great jobs and things that are out there in the world, but what we have to look at is that there's consequences to those kind of decisions and the consequences of the kind of work that we're going to go into. You think, well, that doesn't really have that much of an impact, but it will. There are some jobs that will not endear you to being a disciple of Jesus Christ. There's some jobs that you really can't even do. I got a good friend of mine. His name's Frank. He preaches in Alabama. When he met his wife, she was driving an 80-something thousand-dollar car. She was a beer rep, making lots of money. I mean, lots of money. And he met her and talked to her and got to know her and all that and fell in love and you know all that story. And then she obeyed the gospel. And guess what? She lost all that. Because seek ye first the kingdom of God means that there are prices, there's consequences, the decisions that have to be made. And so when we think about the things that are, you know, it goes all the way to that level, even the kind of people that we hang around with. I mean, obviously, in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, the kind of people that we allow to influence our lives are going to influence us. And again, this phrase is here. You remember it was in Galatians chapter 6? Don't be deceived. Don't kid yourself. You know, that's one of those loud statements. Okay, listen real good now. Don't kid yourself. Don't be deceived. Don't think you're going to get away. Listen here now. Listen real carefully. Evil companions or evil company corrupts good habits. You can't sleep with a dog and not get fleas. That's kind of a crass example. But the kind of friends that you have are going to, you know, because we like our friends. We want to be accepted by our friends, and we want them to like us, and so we're going to kind of do what they want to do. And if we don't have the right kind of a friend, they're going to get us into a lot of trouble, and they're going to take us down a road that we don't want to know, we don't want to go. There's consequences to the kind of people that we have. And, you know, there's going to come a day, trust me, believe it or not, I know that you don't believe it, but one of these days you're going to meet somebody that's just going to knock your socks off, and you're going to think, I just can't live without this person. You're going to get married. And then your life's going to be over. That's not what I meant. Now, you took that completely the wrong way. I said that in another context. But apparently, I need to stop and do a lesson about marriage. But anyway. But think about the consequences of your relationship to who you marry. Now, see, it has to do with the kind of fun that you're going to have. Then it's going to be the kind of the friends that you're going to have. And guess where your mate comes from? Your buddies and your friends. You date your mate. And what he tells us here is in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding and giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel and as being heirs together of the grace of life that your prayers be not hindered. Could I suggest a sort of a rule of thumb here? That when you decide who to date, if you can't pray with that person, why are you dating them? Why are you building a relationship with them if, for example, if you go out to eat, you can't pray, or when you're together and you're talking about things that you can on some occasions pray together. You see, the relationship that you have in marriage is the fact that you're going to be able to pray together and the fact that you're sharing an heritage. Did you notice that in marriage what God is saying is that we are heirs together? Being an heir together means that we have a relationship that I'm going to heaven and she's going to heaven and we're going to be going to heaven together. And that's a consequence that has the spiritual consequences that are given to you. You see, that's how we need to understand there are consequences to the kind of people that we associate with, the kind of people that we're going to be around. And if we're not careful, we're going to marry somebody who's not going to help us get to heaven. And it's sad often that there are people who are going to do the very opposite about getting us to heaven. And that's tough to do. Acts 16, we read the books of 1 and 2 Timothy. We need to see where all this happened and where it came from. You know, there's a lot of things that are important in life, but in Acts 16, Paul and Silas are running around the country there, Derbe, Lystra. And it says in verse 1 that there was a certain disciple was there. His name was Timothy. He was son of a certain Jewish woman who believed his father was a Greek. In verse 2, he was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. And you know what happened with him? Paul was so impressed with this young man, he took him with him. So there's also a lesson for parents. Don't say a lot about how good your child is. Somebody may take him. You know, Paul, I felt so sorry for, you know, his Lois and Eunice. You know, there Timothy was, and he was doing great, and Paul comes in town and takes him away. You know, it's like, what are you doing there? Taking my son away, or my grandson. But do you notice in verse 2, he was well spoken of by the brethren. There are some things that are important in life. One of the best accolades that you can have is when brethren say, I tell you what, that young man, he is a fine young man. That young lady is just a fine, fine young lady. You see, there's consequences to who and what we are. And the fact is that God is not unaware of the fact that we're, you know, that there's a youthfulness to that. And God is not against youthfulness. I think that sometimes in our world we think that, you know, young people just need to behave and they need to be straight. I'm going to tell you, young people need to have fun. You know why? Because they're young and they can do it. They can afford it. They got a body that will allow them to do it. Because when you get as old as, when you get older, you know, you want to have fun, but your body just says, please don't ever do that again. Youth and young adult need to live for their youth. You need to have fun. And that's exactly what God says. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. You know, he says, enjoy the things of youth. And we shouldn't hinder them. We should let them enjoy their youthfulness. But it's with the realization, with the consequences. Verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. God is not saying, you know, be a stick in the mud. And it's not, that's not even a negative statement that, okay, and you can have fun, but you better watch it because we live in such a world that we think that, well, you know, I can be fun, but I can be young and I can be a Christian, but I can't have any fun. Yeah, you can. There's a lot of things to do in life that are fine, that are wholesome and that are godly and that is approved by God. And he is saying here, listen, I want you to live for your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Understand that there's consequences to life. And that's really all he is saying, as he's trying to remind us that there's a sowing and a reaping. So, you know, enjoy life. Have fun. Enjoy the fruits and the labors of youth. Do it in the context of godliness. Because there are consequences to life. And the second thing is to realize that you only get one shot at it. You know, your parents only get one time to do what they can and how they can do. But the other side of that is that you only get one time too. I know that you can't believe that you're in 12th grade or 11th grade, that you're in college and that you've been out of college for 2 or 3 years, or that you're doing all these things and you look back and think, where's my life gone? I'm so old. Yeah, right. How are you, 20-something years old? 16, 17? You only get one shot. There's only one time that we get in our youth. One time to do what we have to do or how we're... And the fact that we're going to live in such a way that, sure, there's going to be things that as we get older, maybe even now, we look back and think, well, I really wish I didn't do that. Well, you know, I regret making that decision, and I wish that that was just not a part of my life. And I think the important lesson is that you cannot live life without regrets. The only thing we can do and what we should do is to live life with fewer regrets. And that's the object. And the reason that we cannot live a life without regrets is because we sin. I mean, the greatest regret we have is the fact that we've sinned. People say, well, I've lived a life and never had any regrets. Oh, yes, you have. We all have, because we all sin. Some may be greater or larger than others, and some regrets may have greater consequences. But the reality of it is, we need to live in such a way that we do not take baggage with us into marriage. We don't take baggage into our family. We don't have baggage that even in an older age we look back and feel very remorseful about what we have done, because sin is going to be remembered. You remember the story of David and Bathsheba? That's in the Old Testament. David was out walking on this roof and he saw Bathsheba and he committed adultery with her. And then he tried to cover it up. He brought Uriah home and tried to get him to go home. And eventually he finally murdered him. And David thought he got away with it. Well, he didn't. Nathan came to him and said, you know, you're the man. Okay, story's done, right? No. Matthew 1, this is the exciting part of Matthew, genealogies. You ever read genealogies? They're exciting. The who begots and the begots, and you can't pronounce half of the names. But here, right in the midst of this genealogy, and it's really a genealogy just affirming that Jesus is the son of Abraham, showing that he is a Jew. But right here in the midst of it all, Matthew 1, verse 6, Jesse begot David the king. David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. There's consequence to life. And I find that in amazement that God reminded us, did not name her, didn't say Bathsheba, but just said, you remember? And that happened like 700-800 years before. But God is trying to say, you get one time. And we've got to see, we've got to use it to our abilities. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 16, the phrase that Paul uses here is to redeem the time. He says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. You know, all of us face the question of, what am I going to do with this great gift of life that God has given me? I mean, here I am and you've got your whole life before you. You've got all kind of dreams and you've got aspirations. And that's great and that's wonderful. And you need to have those things. You need to look at life in the spirit of youth and with the eyes of what is to come and how am I going to spend my life and so many opportunities that are yours. But the obligation that we have, he says in this passage, is we need to redeem the time. Why? Because the days are evil. Redeeming the time means rescuing it from worthlessness. There's a lot of people that look back on their life and think, that's pretty much a waste. I didn't really do a whole lot. I didn't accomplish a whole lot. I may have had a lot of fun and did a lot of stuff, but I didn't really accomplish anything. And sometimes people, you know, young people look at life and say, well, you know, it's just a bowl of cherries anyway. It's just one big party. You know, life is just one joke after another, and they have the idea that that's what youth is all about. We've already warned about that in Ecclesiastes 12. Yes, have fun, but life is serious. There is a solemnity about the whole thing and the reality that there's consequences. And what he says, we need to redeem the time. Youth is a wonderful time, but it is a time to be serious about the choices that you make. Because every choice you make goes into making you the person that you will stand before God one day in judgment. And if you make wrong choices now, guess what kind of an adult you are going to become? And what kind of baggage that you've got to take with you into life? And you don't want to carry that baggage. It's pretty heavy. Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 5, walk in wisdom. For those who are outside, redeeming the time. Again, he shows that. I mean, the decisions that you make today, they're going to make an impact upon your life. How many of us can look back and know that the decision we made at that time, it still impacts us today? And sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not a good decision. And so we've got to know and understand that, you know, life is filled with that reality that we only get one opportunity. You can't go back to elementary school. You can't go back to high school. You can't go back and start all over again, because your life is a one-way road. Proverbs chapter 3 and in verse 1, here the wise man is saying, my son, do not forget my law. Let your heart keep my commands, for length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Not just in God, but also to have favor in before men. Here it is in verse 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Young people, what he's saying is that live your life, enjoy your youth. But do not forsake mercy and truth. Find the will of God. Trust in His will. Don't let the youthful wisdom override the eternal wisdom of God. Acknowledge Him in all of your ways. And I want you to really notice verse 7 and 8. Fear the Lord and depart from Him. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. And that's literal. You know what one of the things about righteousness that will do for you? It will keep you out of a lot of trouble that you would otherwise find yourself in when you're steeped in sin. Because there's consequences to what you do in sin. If there are things that you do that are ungodly, you will pay the penalty physically often because of the decisions that you've made. Emotionally often. And he is just simply saying, trust in the Lord, not on your own understanding. And the third thing is, It's not easy. I mean, we understand that. We should never think that youth is filled with frivolity, because there's a lot of dangers that are out there. There's a lot of challenges that you're going to face. And I guess in some ways that, yes, we could say that it's more difficult today because it is of greater ease and it's easier to get to. You just have to turn your cell phone on. 20 years ago, didn't know what that was. 20 years ago, we had to write with pencil and paper. We didn't text people. We wrote to them. I mean, you know, it's a different world. I mean, we've got more information. I've got more information or more technology on my cell phone than I had on my first computer. I mean, it's a different world. I get that. But there's a lot of dangers out there. The wise man tells us in Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 20, my son, keep your father's command. Do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction of the way of life to keep you from the evil woman. We need to listen to the commands of our fathers. And I love this, the law of your mama. Well, mother, I should say. Mama gives down the law. Dad gives the commands. And when you tie them around your neck and when you run off to college, you remember that that's what they taught you. And you live in accordance with that, as it keeps you away from trouble. Because we know what's out there more than you do. We understand the mistakes maybe that we've made we don't want you to make. We understand. We're not prohibiting you. We're not trying to stifle you. We're just letting you know that there's dangers that are out there. And I mean, it is prolifically out there. There is just a host of it. You look in Proverbs chapter 7. We're not going to read all of this. But he says in verse 1 that we are to keep my words, treasure my commands within you, keep my commands and live, and my law is the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister. And call understanding your nearest kin. That they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. And he goes on and talks about the crafty harlot, how she takes the simple-minded person who has denied the teachings of his parents. You need to listen. It's not glitter and gold out there, like we think. We will make mistakes when we don't listen to the guidance that is given to us, because there's dangers. Pornography is just prevalent beyond belief. Sexual promiscuity, the world accepts it. Well, that's just the norm. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, that's the way people live. That's the way we're supposed to show our love for one another. And you're going to be challenged in your faith. You're going to go to places and they're going to tell you that God is dead. Not to go anywhere, but they talk like they teach that kind of stuff. They're going to ridicule your religion. You're a Christian. You're a fool. What do you listen to your parents for? You need to just make money. You just need to have fun. That's all a lie. That's nothing but a lie. And it's going to be tough because you're going to have to endure through all of that, and you're going to have to come through all that, and you need to listen to what Paul says to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and in verse 22 when he says that you are to flee youthful lust. What do you do when you flee from something? You run. I mean, get on your tennis shoes and run. Because it's not going to do you any good. It's not going to give you the reward that you think. Because faithfulness is not going to come from your parents. It's going to be yours. Now, when we talk about faithfulness being your own, it is planted by your parents and by your teachers and by other people, and that's important. But if you're going to live on your parents' faith, you're going to fail. In other words, you need to believe in God because you believe in God. You need to believe in Jesus Christ because you believe in Jesus Christ. Now, our parents, the parents and teachers and others who are trying to encourage and exhort you, yes, we're trying to help you. But I'm going to tell you, your faith has got to be your own. Joseph, when he was sold into slavery at the tender age of 17, his faith had to be his own because he had a lot to live down. He was being punished. He was being tortured by his brothers. Sold into slavery. David had to walk out on that field in the valley of Elah and slay the giant. He was all by himself. He didn't have other people with him. Daniel was sold into slavery. He made his faith his own. Excuse me. In Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and in verse 12. We talked about that this weekend. Let no one despise your youth. You be an example to the believers in word, conduct, love, spirit, faith, and purity. Till I come, young people, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Don't neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by the prophecy, he tells Timothy, with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. Meditate upon these things. Give yourself entirely to them that your progress may be evident to all. What he's telling Timothy is make your faith your own. You embrace it. You make it what it's going to be. And that'll make you stronger. Because you believe it and you will defend it and you will live for it each day. Because young people, you're never going to cease to exist. This is a lesson for all of us. We are eternal creatures. You're going to die one day. And you need to know that if you don't know that. The old must die, the young can die. And you're going to die one day. But you're still going to exist. You're still going to think. You're still going to feel. You're going to remember, you're going to understand, but it's going to be too late to make any changes. And the way that you live your life and the way that you prepare yourself is the reality that you're really preparing yourself for an eternal world. And the fact that when you look at, I'm going to tell you the book of Ecclesiastes, that's your book. The book of Ecclesiastes is the manual for young people. It's to tell you what life's all about. It tells you what really doesn't work. It tells you what will work. Life's not fair sometimes, okay? A friend of mine said, you know, the book of Ecclesiastes is a little rough. Life's hard and you die. It's a little more than that. But it's telling you that there's a lot of things in this world that are going to attract you and a lot of things like riches and wealth and power and pleasure, but it's all going to be of no use and no avail because you're going to die one day and it's all going to happen to everybody if you're blessed to live an old age. Sure, things are going to change. Youth is going to vanish. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, one of the interesting things about God's verbiage here is that he talks about how that the body changes, verse 2, the sun and the light, and speaking about the affliction and those kinds of things and the eyes, the moon and the stars, you know, when they're not darkened and the clouds do not return after rain. And the day when the keepers of the house tremble, the arms, the strong men bow down, the legs, when the grinders cease because you ain't got no teeth. And those that look through the windows grow dim, your eyes. when the doors are shut in the streets. You know all of that. What that means is that you're going to be old one day. And then you're going to die. But it's not a bad thing. It's a blessing because you know that you have lived a life that you have prepared for eternity. Because you are building a life that is based upon joy. You know what brings true happiness to young people is joy. And the way that we find joy is in the word godliness. Bodily exercise profits nothing. No, it does a little. I forget, I use that argument against Karen to make me exercise. Bodily exercise profits a little. But godliness is profitable for two things. Godliness will save you. Godliness will get you to heaven. But you know what else godliness will do? It'll save you a lot of misery in this world. Godliness will keep you away from alcohol. That doesn't mean that you can't die of cirrhosis of the liver. But the likelihood of you dying of cirrhosis of the liver because of alcoholism is nil because you don't mess with it. The likelihood of you being drunk is going to be nil because you're not going to imbibe. The likelihood of you becoming drunk and getting raped is very nil simply because you're not going to let that affect your life. The likelihood of you drinking and killing somebody in an automobile is not going to happen because you're going to live a godly life. And the reason that you're not going to live with the baggage of regret of sexual promiscuity is because you're going to remain pure until you are married. Why? Because you're living a godly life. You're not going to carry that baggage that other people are going to carry. You're not going to be involved in drugs to ruin your life because you're going to live a godly life. You're going to live a life that is going to notice, is going to have promise of the life that now is. That doesn't mean that you may not have troubles in this life. That doesn't mean that there may not be things that happen to you in life, but they're going to be a lot less than what you're going to live with later. Godliness makes life a lot better in this world because godliness lets you go to sleep at night with a clean and clear conscience because it changes you. And the admonition that we give to our young people is that you need to live a life of godliness to have a life that now is. And I want to go back to what we talked about this weekend. Be strong. Three times in Joshua 1. Be strong and very courageous because you know you can do it. You know you can overcome. You don't need to be afraid. You don't need to be dismayed because God is going to be with you wherever you go. You need to be strong in a world that is trying to destroy you. You need to have good courage to overcome a world that is trying to destroy you. Young people, you can go to heaven. It's not that hard. You just have to have the strength and the courage to serve God. Understand the principles that we have outlined this morning. Live a godly life. Most importantly, the question that you have to ask is to know that there's nothing else that's going to matter in life. It's not going to really matter what kind of job you've got. It's not going to matter what kind of car you drive or what kind of clothes or where you go to school or anything like that. It only matters whether you're saved. And if you're not saved, you're lost. And if you're lost, you could die. You will die. But you can die sooner than you think. And if you're not saved, you're lost. And if you're lost, there ain't no hope. But you see, godliness will bring you to God. Believing that Jesus is the Son of God, you can make that confession to be baptized in water, to rise up in the newness of life, and you can be His child. And then as a young person, be a Timothy, be a Daniel, be a David, be Joshua, Be strong and of good courage. Let's stand as we sing.